As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, Meg here, and you're listening to Full Time with Meg Linehan, a show all about women's soccer on the Athletic Podcast Network. It is Wednesday, and we are one day away from Thursday's bronze medal match between the United States and Australia and the gold medal match between Sweden and Canada. Reminder, if you are here in the United States, you'll be watching both of those games on USA Network. USA versus Australia, again, 4 a.m. Eastern. Sweden versus Canada, 10 p.m. Eastern. There has been a request to actually move the game because of the conditions with the heat. So stay tuned on that front. I'm sure there will be an update on Twitter if that request from Sweden and Canada is actually successful. Anyway, co-worker and fellow dog so tattoo haver Jeff Reuter is here to help me on our final match day minus one episode of our Olympics coverage. Yes, we are coming to the end of this long, long journey. Before we get into it, subscribe to The Athletic for all of our women's soccer coverage and beyond. There's always a deal for you at theathletic.com/fulltime. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Meg.
All right, so it's Wednesday. I got to wake up at 2:55 a.m. to be on the press conference for the U.S. Women's National Team ahead of the bronze medal match. Steph, our fellow coworker, woke up where I think just actually stayed awake because Australia was at 1:15 a.m. The U.S. was at 3 a.m. and they were actually 15 minutes late.
So which NWSL team is going to say, you know what, this is the new normal. Our press conferences are at 3 a.m.
Please, please, Lord, no. but yeah, I can see someone being like, yeah, that feels like a great plan.
at least for the next month. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you guys are already in this zone of 3 a.m. press conferences. We might as well just roll with it.
Brutal.
So, as someone who is maybe not, like, you know, first time on this Olympic edition of the podcast, you've been following along. Just kind of, what is your perspective of the U.S. women's national team been throughout this tournament? Because I find it really interesting to talk to people that I haven't been talking to kind of every day about what's going on.
I mean this in the nicest way possible. It is very strange to have a tournament where even my most casual, like, only watch women's and men's national team games, don't follow NWSL, don't follow MLS, don't really wake up for the Premier League. It's very strange to have conversations with these people and they know the entire roster.
Yeah.
Because it's the same roster. And so they still have these preconceptions of like, oh, why would you not start Megan Rapinoe in every single game? Why would you not? It's very interesting to have some of those conversations. But I mean, it just hasn't been enjoyable to watch. And I know this is something that you, Steph, and Yuki are three-headed. Columnist monster.
I mean, Yuki Nagasato should always be listened to, but I think it was really interesting of she had kind of diagnosed the problem really early, right? And I think we got confirmation of that from Megan Rapinoe, but
yeah,
it is so weird to having gone to the games in Texas and in Connecticut, right? And I just, I don't, like, did that disallowed goal curse this team, right? Because there was so much focus on, like, that's it. They found it. They've got it, right? Like,
right.
Look at the, like, yes, it's stupid that it didn't count, but, like, that is kind of the platonic ideal of the U.S. women's national team. And then... I mean, this is what we've gotten instead.
It just looks like a coach who overthought pretty much every decision and thought, I have this assembly of players who have won gold in another tournament. And so I will copy paste them in with a more pragmatic style, which in theory wins tournaments for club and for country. And this should be a no-brainer, forgetting that a lot of what made them so good in 2019 was the verve factor and the simple, I like playing these games. And I feel like if you're going to be in a stadium without fans, just try random shenanigans on the field. Honestly, just like, what, who cares? You're not going to get booed. You're not going to have people like loudly questioning, what are you doing? And there's been none of that. Right. And so, it's been, I don't know. It definitely hasn't been a vintage by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it also is a credit to the advancements that I think a lot of people, even in 2019, weren't really acknowledging across other federations across the world, where everyone was like, yeah, but it's the United States. And it kind of came to roost, honestly, except for like a quick scare against France in 2019.
Well, I think Spain was actually the game where it really felt like, oh, this game is not going to plan. Like, right. That is the game that I remember being in person, and I was sitting next to Andy Doss from the New York Times, and I just remember looking at him, and I was like, am I annoying you? Because I feel very tense right now. And he's like, I can't tell. And I was like, great, that's what I'm actually going for right at the moment, because I am internally losing my shit right now. So, I mean, I think I think 2019, I remember the guide that I wrote, like, it was kind of the concept of, this is the most competitive World Cup ever. And I think that played out in certain ways, but was not necessarily the case for the U.S. women's national team.
Yeah.
And then this Olympics, right? Like, I don't know. I think you have to put it in context of other tournaments, but also I think that there's so much different with this one that it is impossible to just kind of say, this is a direct continuation, when there are so many kind of like multiple asterisks around it of like, COVID, year, delay, you know, all of these things piling up. But I think it is the same players. It is a different head coach. I think overthinking is kind of a good way of putting it, because I think some of the roster rotation and this, like, who's in the 18, who's out of the 18, right? Like, this team was very used to kind of consistency across starting 11s and stuff. And I think that has been an adjustment. And, like, I think mentally you can say, like, well, that makes sense. Like, that's a good way to play a tournament with such tight turnarounds and these kinds of conditions, all that, like, you can see the logic, but then it doesn't pan out.
But you don't have to like the logic. And
you don't
have
to like the logic. Yeah, sure.
What do you think if they had snuck past Canada? Penalty call goes the opposite direction. Okay. They're here. Are we having all of these conversations, do you think, at a broader level?
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I mean, I think yes, but we're feeling less anxious about them. I think what's really interesting too is I went back to read some of the like really early stuff that I wrote when Kate Markgraf got hired, when Vlatko Andonovski got hired. I remember having this long conversation with Kate Markgraf, and she's like, you know, everybody's really happy with me right now because everything's going really well. But what happens when we start to actually get challenged, right? Like, this is not going to last forever.
Yeah.
And we are, like, we're not going to win forever. So what happens when there's, like, legitimate problems that need to be fixed?
Right.
Like, and I think that's why, I don't know, the more I've gotten from the Canada game, like, I just think the more patient I've gotten, because this is not a thing that I think has to be rushed, but also I think we are looking at a period and a cycle coming up where there are going to be failures.
Yeah.
And that we're going that needs to be embraced.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be this perfect sale anymore. There are going to be losses. There are going to be mistakes made. There are going to be times where you're going to have to prioritize development ahead of results. That is not something that we're necessarily used to with the U.S. women's national team.
Definitely not. But we've seen these, you know, on the men's side, you talk about golden generations a lot. And I think with the U.S. women's national team, no one talks about it because it'd be hard to pick just one. But
it just kind of keeps going.
Right. But I think that what you've seen with coaches like Jill, like Pia, like they were really good at phasing out veterans in a way that wasn't like disrespectful. It wasn't this thing where it's just like, okay, the tournament's done and now whatever. And sometimes there are exceptions. I see the face and now I'm suddenly remembering some of these names that you're going to bring at me. But I think that...
Yeah. I mean, some of it is player retirements. But yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think that has always been a long discussion that we've had with the U.S. women's national team is the phasing in and out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you think about... I think Hope Solo is one of the best examples.
Yes, that was the name that
of
suddenly
the plans
came to mind.
Not being there, right? And it's tough with goalkeepers, but yeah, I mean, I think that this has been an ongoing kind of existential question about the U.S. women's national team. Is just if this team is so deep, right?
Yeah.
How do you manage all of this? And I just think about Allie Krieger in the 2019 World Cup getting so much shit because she said a U.S. women's national team B team could compete in this tournament and advance, right? And people took great offense to that. But it was not necessarily a slight on other teams. It was just, okay, but we have so many people vying for this team.
Yeah.
That at what point do you, like, how do you manage all of these things?
I think that there's going to be a very interesting non-sporting factor of the marketability of some of this, like, over 30 generation. I don't think that you've ever seen quite as much mileage that the Federation has been able to get from its own players, even with all of the litigation that's been going on in the background. And so I think that, you know, it will be like, how do you pivot away from the players that you've been featuring for a decade or whatever, your goal scorers, your stoppers, and how do you move on to the next wave, right? And how do you actually bring them up when you as a federation aren't giving them the opportunities to develop at a young age, but now suddenly you're trying to kind of throw that responsibility of being the face of the program on. There are obvious players who are younger who should be just fine to kind of carry that baton into the next cycle as we're looking ahead to 2023 now. But I don't think it's going to be a comfortable process. And it'll be very interesting to see, should some of that have been done before this tournament? Probably at least in one or two cases. But I think that as you and Steph went through the roster before the tournament, it was like nothing really is a surprise in terms of the omissions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a difference between, this was so much of it too, like, yeah, I can give you my 18, right? But fundamentally what we're seeing out of the Federation is like, there's not really going to be a lot of surprises that this is going to be a conservative roster, right? Like Tobin Heath and Julie Ertz were kind of the big question marks.
Yeah.
But also, they're not really, like, if they are even remotely. Also, the fact that we didn't see Julie Ertz, like, really at all for a couple of months before the Olympics, she doesn't really play. And then all of a sudden, now she's just like, okay, back to being the Iron Woman of this midfield. Just perfect, classic Julie Ertz.
And truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, I had a couple of other questions for you, too, actually, about covering this tournament. What are the biggest differences that you've felt? Well, because at first, I don't know how much you've talked about this. Like, at first, you were planning on going to Tokyo.
Yes.
And then the world said no. And how different has that been in terms of your ability to cover and find the storylines around this team compared to when you were actually boots on the ground with them?
I mean, I think it's definitely different because obviously the access is very different, right? And we're doing press conferences at 1 a.m., 3 a.m., right? And so the access is always very different just because when we were in France on the ground. Like, yes, you're still kind of limited to the players that they give you, but also, you know, it's a mixed zone, so you can kind of hop around and you can grab different players and all of that kind of stuff. But I do think that in this Olympics anyway, the storylines have been kind of forced no matter what. Like, you know, you're writing kind of what is going wrong the entire time anyway.
Yeah.
So in terms of the actual coverage, I think this is a much more straightforward approach to the actual games. And I think the Olympics are always going to be different than the World Cup, where the World Cup, it is just the game. And then with Olympics, you're kind of competing with everything else. So it is definitely different. I am definitely already kind of like, wow, I'm very ready for 2023 and to do this in a very different way. But I think in some ways, the NWSL Challenge Cup was kind of a good preparation just because of remote access and like having your questions had to, like, you have to submit your questions for some of these press conferences in writing, and you are trying to navigate how a written question is going to be interpreted by someone who is not you to a player or a coach in a press conference. There is some of that stuff that there's at least some experience to pull from, but it is definitely not ideal conditions. But even if I were in Japan, it would not be ideal conditions. I mean, honestly, this press conference with Vlatko Andonovski and AD French last night at 3 a.m., it was 4 p.m. local time, but everyone is still in Tokyo. They take buses out to this venue. So there was exactly one person actually in the room for this press conference. And it was like a guy from FIFA.com who got four questions in, and all of them were a little weird. So
I bet.
It was definitely just a weird vibe, but that's been the tournament.
Would you say that I think weird vibe is a very good summation of this tournament.
Yeah.
But would you say that is this a tournament where the closed door thing impacted the United States more than other countries?
I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I think everybody's kind of off put by it, but I don't think it's really helping. But I don't, like, in terms of, so I mean, my piece after the last thing was kind of like this root cause analysis, right?
Right.
Of like,
yes, with the hand drawn charts and everything.
Yeah. And I think that it's a factor, but it's not necessarily a contributing factor. But I think, again, like, the vibe has been weird. And I don't think that helps because.
Yeah.
I think that the team really does actually kind of feed off energy, whether it's positive or negative. I mean, I think that was one of the really interesting things about France and that quarterfinal against France and Paris. They're not used to having a crowd that is not in their favor. And I think that actually worked in their favor in a very weird way. Like, they're not used to being like the villain in the story. And I think that there's something that teams feed off of. I mean, that's kind of something that we've heard consistently from the NWSL side, that teams love to play in Portland. And they feed off of that energy. And so I think not having any energy building at all is weird for everyone, though.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I think it's weird for everyone, but I think for, like you said, I mean, the sheer notability of the team, for regardless if you're a neutral fan who only loosely follows soccer, if you're a fan who follows the tournament and your country isn't playing, in this case, I think that the U.S. is such an easy team to latch onto and have a strong opinion on, which is the sign of pretty much any great sports team, is you can have a strong opinion about them regardless how often you watch them, for better or for worse. And I feel like in that sense, yes, every single country would have loved to have more fan support. But I think that it actually does impact the United States more just because of the sheer scale of prominence that they have in this arena, the amount of people who are aware of their players, who are aware of the team, who would be able to jump in, even if they are more of a casual fan sort of thing. And I think in the absence of that, that's where you see, I mean, that to me is where like the fun also goes out the window. Cause it's like, okay, yeah. Well, why am I having fun? Right. It's people get self-conscious when they laugh and they're alone in a room. Right. Like it's just like a simple thing where, you know,
well, and that's like when leagues were coming back, right, and Bundesliga was the first league back, and that was such a weird vibe. Like everybody was like, well, I guess I'll watch Bundesliga now. And then the vibe was so weird because there are no fans. And I think especially when you're in venues that are meant for Olympic play, right, like they are in very big stadiums.
Oh yeah, yeah,
it is a weird scale thing happening.
Yeah, that's a lot of empty seats. And especially like, I'm sure that it brings you back to like youth days where no one's there or whatever. I don't know. It's just like,
yeah,
weird vibe, very weird vibe for the whole tournament. But I also, at the same point, while I do think it had an outsized impact, I think that, like you said, it impacted everyone. That's not really a great excuse to say, well, if the stadiums had been full, we'd be, you know, seeing the US go for the gold instead of the bronze. But
I mean maybe that is though something, if we're talking about joy for this team, right, I think that is something that certainly at least helps joy happen, right, when you are getting that sort of feedback loop with a crowd, right, like that I think helps celebrations, it helps, you know, defensive, like all of that kind
of
stuff,
all
like
of
if
it.
You have a crowd that is either affirming or booing you. Right. Again, there's energy there that can help feed into the energy of a game.
Yeah.
And I think if that's, you know, if Megan Rapinoe's out here after the game saying like, you know, we're missing our joy, we don't have the juice, right? Like, again, there's going to be a lot to look at in terms of coaching decisions, in terms of execution, right? Like there's a lot to pick through. Again, I don't think we are going to have nearly enough to like definitively from an outside point of view say like, here's what went wrong, right?
Yeah.
But I think like it has to be a factor.
Mm-hmm. It has to be. And I think that it's even just simple things as, you know, I've talked to players throughout the pandemic who have said like, it's so much easier to just have 5 minutes where you're on autopilot in a game. Where it's not that you're necessarily like zoned out, you're not thinking about the game, but it's that whole sort of like, I mean, you know, you've done interviews where you're not really fully mentally present, and it's been fine. You've gotten good answers from it, but like you were thinking about what was next. You were thinking about, okay, do I have time for lunch? It's 3:30 in the afternoon, right? Like you've been in this phase, and they do the same thing, right? And for them, if you have those 5 minutes, that's where you run into a thing like a ball slips under your foot and you have to kind of quick track back to get the ball out, and then an opponent's on rushing because they're not zoned out. And and that is a thing that they have felt they are experiencing more in the absence of fans, and also something then domestically in leagues where they've said less of an issue because now there are still some people. And even if you just have 30% of your usual crowd, you don't really notice the scale. It's just the volume. So
yeah,
I think that there also is some psychological factor to this in terms of you are used to playing for the big moment and now the big moment doesn't feel big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think, I mean, there's also going to be, that has been one of the main themes of this Olympics too, is mental health of athletes, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a lot to think about in terms of pressure put on the U.S. And that has obviously been a mantle that they have worn for a very long time. But now I think you get to maybe flip the question and say, how do you take the pressure off?
Yeah.
To the right? Like, can you minimize that? Like, is that actually a blessing for this team? Because right at the moment, it sure does not feel like it. But also, if you are now thinking of, okay, there's going to be this kind of changing of the guard and a lot of work ahead in the cycle, and maybe your results are not necessarily going to be what you want, but you're going to prioritize development. Is there a way to take some of the pressure of win-loss records?
Yeah.
And adapt them and say, what are we actually prioritizing? And I think that's a much bigger question, and I think a much more helpful one rather than just like, are they winning?
Right, right. Or is this player ready to be the last player at that position, right?
Right, you know, right.
I don't think that's a terribly productive way of framing all of this stuff, but I think you're right too, is that now we're going to run into a stretch without a major tournament right on the horizon. Like, yeah, qualifying is going to be starting sooner than it feels like it will be, because that's life now. But there is hopefully a little more of this wiggle room to really look at league play, to broaden the pool, to find ways to get younger, to find ways to not put so much pressure on your veterans to carry. I mean, I think of something like Julie Ertz, like a phenomenal just kind of like return to form, but also there's no reason that the only option at that position should have been, well, we hope that after 2 months off, she's still Julie, and she is still Julie.
Yeah, I mean, Andre Carlisle had a great tweet, like, I just really don't want this entire team success to hinge on one player's knees, like, which is fair.
Yeah.
It's fair.
It's so fair. And it's just, how do you find a way to get around that, right? And I think those are fun questions. I mean, from a coverage perspective, not fun questions from a team perspective. And certainly from a fan perspective, it's not always that fun too, because it requires patience for success for a team which recently has required no patience for success.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Anthony DeChico had, I thought, a good thread as well, just in terms of like asking, why do we actually watch this team? Mm. Right. And like, yes, I'm paid to watch this team, but obviously I watched this team before I was paid to watch this team.
That's it.
And I mean, his main takeaway is like, we watch it because it is fun and it makes us like feel emotions. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think even from like a fan viewer point of view, right, like, it was starting to kind of feel like a grind because everything was so high expectations.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of like pitting players against each other and all that. Like, I think now everybody gets a chance to kind of take a step back and from every point of view on this team. And there's a lot of stuff happening off of the field, obviously, with the appeal, CBA negotiations by the end of the year, like all of this kind of stuff. And there's weight on all of this, and there's weight for performances, because unfortunately people feel like the performances then create the value that is part of the appeal, right? So there's a lot of weight happening everywhere. And now I think there is maybe an opportunity to take a step back and say, how do you take some of this weight off everyone involved, from the people watching at home to the players, to the set, like all of this kind of stuff of just, what do we actually want this team to be? And I think that that's a maybe healthier way of going about it.
I think so. I mean, it serves as something of a palate cleanser, like the weird, weird flavorless, like vacuum of a cracker that they give you at a winery between pours, where they're like, this will completely wipe you back to square one. And sometimes that's okay. Some, like, you would never choose that. You would never go to a store and buy a bag of those and sit down and, you know, snack on those while you're watching anything. But you need those sometimes. You need to be able to have those resets and to be able to say, hey, like, even if this isn't going to be as good as the last thing, like, it's still better. And I think that sometimes, like you said, it's expectation setting, it's pressure release, it's healthier that way. And I think that it's there's no shame in admitting that, like, the same group of players could not forever be, you know. And I think that there was some weird expectation. There's been this clinging to normalcy over the last 18 months where everyone wanted another run like France, because that's what they remembered. And it's like, I had a lot of fun with that. This is going to be more of that, right? And so when it's not, you know, I think that everyone's expectations, everyone's hopes, they're failed to be met. And it's, you know, how do you do something productive with that?
Yeah. I think that is a perfect place for us to stop, and we will now get to wait and see what happens tomorrow morning. We'll find out. All right, Jeff, thanks for popping on the pod. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks for tuning in to our Olympic coverage here at Full Time with Meg Linehan, and thanks to Jeff for popping in on the pod. You can follow all of our Olympic coverage at The Athletic. You can support our women's soccer coverage by subscribing at theathletic.com/fulltime. Full Time does not exist without the work and support of senior podcast producer Michael Zimmerman. I'm Meg. I'll be back with you tomorrow, of course, with Steph Young. Thanks for listening.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.